Hey, podcasters, it's Glenn Beck and Stuber here. Mm. And we're here with our podcast, which is why you're here. It's a good one. For Tuesday, we had the sad story of a man's struggle to travel. Now, he's a travel guide guy, but he feels very guilty of traveling the world with his family.
Can you imagine living this guy's life? The tortured existence.
Hell.
It's amazing.
Hell. Also, Camilla's wink that she gave to the press yesterday behind the back of Donald Trump and the Washington Post. What does it mean? I think I know. And we'll talk about that. Also, we have Steven Crowder's apology tour, a little bit on that, and Venezuela and the U.S. Yes, Venezuela has collapsed in a spectacular fashion. But did you know that in some places in America, it's worse than in Venezuela? We get to all that and so much more here on the podcast.
And we talked a little bit about Steven Crowder's apology for the just horrible things he's done to people over the years.
Very sincere.
You have to watch on YouTube if you haven't seen it. You also get Steven Crowder's show all the time, all the back episodes and everything, on blazetv.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn. You'll save $10 on your subscription. You should do that because people are being targeted. Steven's being targeted right now on YouTube. And these venues are going away for conservatives, but not the Blaze. So blazetv.com/Glenn, promo code Glenn. Here's the podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Home Title Lock says there has been a new breach of 900 million homeowners' files, but it's only 900 million. It's only, you know, like three times the population of the United States. So, you know, what are the odds that you're in? It's the worst data breach in U.S. history. Now, your home's title, mortgage, bank loans, personal information now is probably in the hands of identity thieves, and they can forge your home's title so it appears that you sold it to them. Then they get loans from online lenders using your equity and stick you with the payments. Right now, don't give identity thieves a chance. Register your address right now for free and get 30 days of free protection. Go to HomeTitleLock.com. That's HomeTitleLock.com. Get 30 days of free protection. All you have to do is just register your address now at HomeTitleLock.com. 30 days of free protection. HomeTitleLock.com. If seeing the world helps ruin it, shouldn't we stay home? The glaciers are melting. Coral reefs are dying. Miami Beach is slowly going under. Quick, says the voice in your head. Go see them before they disappear. You are evil, says another voice. For you are hastening its destruction. To a lot of people who like to travel, these are morally bewildering times. Something that seemed like pure escape and adventure has become a double-edged, harmful epitome of selfish consumption. Going someplace far away, we now know, is the biggest single action a private citizen can take to worsen climate change. One seat on a flight from New York to Los Angeles effectively adds months' worth of human-generated carbon emissions to the atmosphere, and yet we fly. We fly more and more. Still, we wonder, how much is that one vacation really hurting anyone or anything? But it turns out that there are ways to quantify your impact on the planet, at least roughly. In 2016, two climatologists published a paper in the prestigious Journal of Science showing a direct relationship between carbon emissions and the melting of the Arctic ice sea. A square feet of Arctic summer sea ice cover that one passenger's share of emission melts on a 2,500-mile flight. Each additional metric ton of carbon dioxide, or its equivalent, your share of the emissions on a cross-country flight one way from New York to Los Angeles, shrinks the summer sea ice cover by 3 square meters. And in February, my family of three flew from New York to Miami for what seemed like a pretty modest winter vacation.
But the online carbon calculator tells me that our seats generated the equivalent of 2.4 metric tons of carbon dioxide. Throw in another quarter ton for the 600 miles of driving we squeezed in, and a bit of the snorkeling trip, and the heated pool at the funky trailer park Airbnb, and the bill comes up to be about 90 square feet of Arctic ice. An area about the size of a pickup truck. Oh, when I did this calculation, I pictured myself standing on a pickup truck-sized sheet of ice as it broke apart and plunged me into frigid waters. And there, the last thing I saw, a polar bear glaring hungrily at me. You know, the average American causes his or her greenhouse gas emissions to create serious suffering and or deaths of two future people. In other words, going for that Sunday drive has the expected effect of ruining someone's afternoon. Multiply that joyride by a three-person Florida vacation and you've ruined somebody's month. Something to ponder while soaking up the UV-drenched rays on some distant tropical beach. Oh, this poor man, I just don't know what he's supposed to do. It's sad.
Did you catch the end of that story as well?
I was just going to say... I'd like to be able to tell you that knowing what I've learned reporting in this piece, I've sworn off long-distance travel. But actually, this summer, we're going to Greece with a stopover in Paris. Carbon footprint of the plane tickets, 10.6 metric tons, enough to melt a small apartment-sized piece of the Arctic. The increase in airline passengers worldwide since 2013, we've committed to go months ago, but I suspect we'd make the same choice today. We're going because last year we canceled a vacation to come home and watch our dog die.
that was the capper to the whole thing. This poor guy, he's torturing himself over whether he's going to go travel somewhere and kill the planet, and then his vacation gets canceled because he has to watch his dog die. What a life this guy has.
Well, he did say before they go, they're going to buy enough offsets to capture the annual methane emissions from a dozen cows. So that will offset. I think they're putting... Those are cow farts in a jar, right?
That is, yeah, cow farts in a jar.
You take a mason jar and you kind of screw it into the back end of a cow. Mm-hmm. And when they fart, you just pull it out quickly and put the cap on.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
So I'm selling those at the Standing Rock Ranch. You can get the Standing Rock Ranch cow fart mason jars available soon at glenbeck.com, where we will capture all of that methane gas for you for a low, low price of $50 a jar.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a lot of carbon.
You won't have a problem, for instance, on our cruise. I wonder what... 3,000 people flying from America.
Oh, they go into that in the article, that if you think a cruise is better than the plane, you got another thing coming.
No, but we're taking a plane to Europe,
yeah,
and then
we're cruising
onto a cruise.
And then we're taking a plane back.
Right. Yeah. And we're doing that with 3,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. We have to calculate our carbon footprint.
They do calculate it for big cruise ships in there. And they say, I want to say it's 3 or 4 times as much. And the cruise ship company's like, guys... There's a difference between a plane and a ship. Like, that's just a transportation device. This is an entire, amusement park and, basically city floating around. So you can't really say they're equal, which I think is a fair point.
So it's 3 to 4 times the amount.
Yeah, sad.
So can we calculate that? If you would like to help increase our carbon footprint, we would love for you to go on our cruise. We're going to Italy. But then we're going to fire those engines up and we're going to sail to Greece. There's nothing like sailing to Greece. Every great story of ancient world had you sailing into Greece.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to do it under, I don't even know, diesel power.
Heavy oil, I believe.
Dirty oil power. And we're just going to be growing. And then, as if that's not a big enough carbon footprint, we're going to Jerusalem, where we'll be meeting Bill O'Reilly, and we're going to be doing a show there. But we're going to get off the cruise ship, get into buses, all 3,000 of us, and we're going to head to a big outdoor theater. So, I mean,
it'll be outdoors, though, so your hot air will go directly into the atmosphere.
Yeah, well, Bill's carbon footprint of just him talking is enormous.
They had a they have a description in there about how these cruise ships decided to put scrubbers on the ends of their
scrubbing bubbles.
Yeah, scrubbing bubbles. Yeah. Basically, if you've seen the scrubbing bubbles cartoons, right, they have those,
right,
basically.
Okay, yeah.
And they make everything better with the exhaust. Mm-hmm. And then now they've found out that those are also creating problems stunningly. And environmentalists are banning those all around the world, which is a shocking development. I didn't see it coming because they ask for these things and then they always later turn on them and tell you can't use them anymore.
Yeah.
Because remember,
like everybody, quick, build giant windmills. You've got to build them. We can put them in the sea. No, they're killing all of the birds. And, of course, they're wrecking the Kennedy's view of the sound.
Yes,
so.
Which is more important.
More important.
More important.
Yeah.
The same thing with plastic bags. Remember, plastic bags were supposed to be the solution.
Right.
It was because paper bags were killing all the trees.
So somebody I know went to Shake Shack last night.
Someone you know?
Yeah.
Well, why?
Definitely not me. Definitely not me.
Not you.
But no. But somebody I know went to Shake Shack last night and noticed that on the straws, it says compostable.
Mm-hmm.
And this person, who is just evil, thought to himself, how do you, I mean, why wouldn't you just take plastic straws and just write that on the label of the straw cover anyway, and then say, oh, really? Yeah, we'll put it in the ground and it disintegrates in 100 years, so.
It's compostable or whatever. You know what? If it doesn't, come check with me in 100 years.
Come check
with
me in 100 years.
Because I will fix that problem in
about
a century.
I'm going to fix that right away.
Yeah.
Right away.
That is, and of course, if we have the ability to have compostable plastic, then why do I ever get a paper straw, which is birthed directly from Satan? Why do I get any paper straws? The devil's
just
creation.
Because it's just to help you back to the cave.
Yeah,
it's like you're frustrated with the paper straw. Yeah, yeah, but it helps you back to the cave where you won't have any electricity at all. You won't have any modern conveniences. No medicine. No phones. No connections. Yeah. Nothing.
I went out to breakfast with my kids this weekend. You know what I ate the breakfast off of?
Styrofoam.
Wooden silverware. Wooden.
Did they throw it away?
I mean, that's certainly what I did with it. I don't know what they did with it. But it's wood. It's made, like, you know, you ever go to like a gelato shop and they always have the wooden spoons, which are like horrible. No one would want to eat off a wooden spoon. It's terrible.
Well, they're really, I mean, the wooden stuff that you have, you know, big wooden spoons in your house.
It's not like that.
Filled with bacteria.
And also, it's not like that, right? It's like that, like, wood that, like, holds on to your lips and tongue take it out. Like, it's the worst eating experience. They had a knife, a fork, and a spoon, and they were all wood, and it was the only choice.
How many trees did they kill?
And impossible to eat with them. They don't do the things that forks are supposed to do. They just don't. They don't work. Okay, they're terrible, terrible inventions, and it's people like this guy, this travel guy, who's going to go to that place and write about it and say, oh, the wonderful rustic nature of the wooden silverware, and they're going to say it's a good thing, and then these people are going to continue to do it.
But then they will adopt the wooden silverware until they then go, do you know how many forests it takes to make this wooden silverware? And then they will ban it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, stop! You guys realize you're just going, it's you're like a hamster, and you just keep going around in a wheel. You're not actually moving forward. You realize that, Mr. Hamster.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks.
I noticed Camilla was being naughty. Do you have any comments on her naughtiness or anything?
You know, I didn't even see Camilla's naughtiness.
Oh, you didn't?
I didn't even see it.
She winked, and the Washington Post said, what did she mean? What was the purpose of a wink?
Do we know what the purpose was?
Nope. And when you watch it, it's so stupid. Mm. She just turned around from the pool of reporters and just winked at them.
I was actually, I'm surprised that Charles was there. I'm surprised that Harry was there, because those people, you know, they hate Trump. I mean, they're as left wing as you can get.
Oh, yeah. They are. I mean, what's his name? Who's married to the queen? What's his name?
Who's married to the queen?
Queen, yeah.
Philip.
Mm-hmm. Duke. What is he? He's the.
I don't know.
Whatever. So the guy who's not king, mm-hmm. Philip. He has said on record that people are a virus, and that he wishes that he could come
so
back. It's Philip.
I know. I remember this environment. We had this in one of the books, an Inconvenient Book, I believe.
Right.
His quote about humans are a virus, and he wanted to come back and end the virus or something like that.
Yeah, something.
I'll find it. It's a bizarre.
I mean, they are so crazy.
They are. They're really nuts on the global warming thing. The whole family. And so they're not Trump fans. You know that. You know that. They're not fans.
I loved it.
I know.
I absolutely do love Queen Elizabeth. I think she's great.
Do you love her because you watched The Crown?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's... I have a little affinity for her now, too. Because of that.
Yeah, The Crown. You see what sacrifices this woman has made in her life.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable sacrifice. And you hate her family even more.
Philip is... not a great guy.
No, you just end up hating them all, except for her. And I really like her. And I like her because she's never entered politics ever.
Right.
And the temptation to do that must have at times been extraordinary. What an English. Extraordinary. And she's never done it, and I love that. She was delightful to Donald Trump yesterday.
She went out of her way, I think.
You would have no
really
idea how she, and I don't know how she feels. Maybe she likes him and the rest of the family doesn't, but maybe she hates him, but you don't have any idea. And I love that about her.
She's always taken her role pretty seriously, you know.
Yeah.
And it shows. And she's, you know, and if The Crown is accurate, she is a pretty amazing person, because she's been through a lot. And she's, 164 years old now?
Oh, she dies. Man, that family's on the run.
Oh,
the
man.
Torches are coming for that family. You know, she's like, somehow another, Lord, please let me outlive my children. Please.
And how long do they put up with a monarchy that just costs them money and doesn't really do anything? How long?
So
how
weird.
Long do it's they like, do that?
They just keep it just out of tradition purely. I mean, that is,
and tourism. Mm-hmm. I think they do a lot for tourism.
Possibly.
Weird. I mean, that transition seems like it would have been difficult to convince the king and queen of. You know what? You're going to still be king and queen. You're just not going to do anything anymore. You're going to be just a tourist trap.
So, I don't think they said that at the time. It's not like, get in the wagons, you witches. We're going to see the queen and king.
That's kind of what happened, though.
Sure that,
how
that
long of a period did that happen over? Because I will be honest, and I said this earlier, I do not care about these people at all in any way.
When did that happen?
How did it happen? Now, you feel like it should be, it had to be over a century or two?
I don't know.
Or you just slowly lose your power?
Wasn't Queen Victoria kind of... powerful? She was.
I think they still had some.
Yeah, I think they did.
Yeah, I think so. but I'm not positive.
And I gotta say,
when that transition was made, because I don't understand their parliamentary system either.
Thank you.
It's like
I don't
the
think
metric
it's an improvement.
There's no way to tell what's going on over there.
At least you can understand.
There's no way to tell.
And they always are having elections. It's like
always.
They're
having almost going to do that in. They're going to do that again in Israel. Had one 2 months ago,
and because he couldn't form a government, they're having another one.
Why don't you just leave
the ballots in the boxes, and then just every 2 months count them again?
Yeah.
Something
is irritating. I think, honestly, the king and queen thing might be better. Just go back to it. At least you
for
know
them,
who you're going to.
It might be.
Just go back to it. Just ask the person. They'll just tell you, you know, you can eat cake or whatever. And then it's over.
I don't think that's...
None of that's even true. But still...
That's true, but...
At least it's an understandable system.
Yeah.
These poor people are out there. They probably work more hours going to vote than they do at their actual jobs.
And how much does that cost them every
What do you expect from a group of people who think cookies are biscuits? Come on.
Yeah.
It's fair.
Well,
it's a
fair,
really good,
fair point.
Fair observation.
Have some biscuits.
It might be the definitive
No, thank
point
you. I'll have some cookies. Thank you.
Haven't we showed them the way? We showed you how to do this. It's not that hard. Okay?
Yeah.
It's worked pretty well for 243 years. And you see that. You see our shining example up on the hill.
Oh, is it shiny?
Do this. Yes.
Is it so shiny?
Well, it used to be.
It's still a hell of a lot better than everywhere else.
It is.
No, it is.
And you see this over and over.
At least we've got a 4-year definitive term for our president.
We are in the middle of impeachment proceedings, but still.
Still.
We're not. Really.
It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Right. He's not going to be removed from office. That would be amazing.
No, but there are processes to make that shorter, obviously, but still, I mean, it doesn't happen, right? There's almost always a peaceful transition where
he never steps down because people disagree with him on things. Oh, they voted in Wyoming on that bill, and now you got to step down. That never happens.
No.
Thank goodness.
No. And I feel like it's one of those things where America has led the world out of tyranny. Basically, in most cases.
Literally.
Yeah, but it's not everywhere. But, yeah. I mean, has done a good job at basically leading the world out of tyranny. And then everyone gets past that level where they get rid of the worst stuff. And then they look at us and they're like, we're not going to go all the way there. We're going to go like half the way there. Let's do the Britain thing, because that's probably better. Wait, do you guys remember Revolutionary War, British Empire, like all that stuff? Like, remember, we kind of won that one. We won the Russia thing. We've won all of these.
Yeah.
Maybe you should just copy what we're doing. Like, we didn't copyright it. We want you to take it on.
We beg people, practically.
Yeah. I mean, because maybe...
We try to force people.
I know.
Yeah.
We will do this system.
I don't want to.
No, you will.
We don't like it,
That's
though.
Probably.
We don't understand it.
You can't.
How do you not understand it?
Nobody resigns when they make a mistake.
Right. That is so weird. Like,
really weird.
You get elected for a term... You stay that term. You do your best during that term.
You don't put together the government.
No,
the people elect the government.
Yeah, people just elect it. And you know what? You don't have to have a coalition. How about this? When a vote comes up, you vote how you believe.
How about that?
Some bills, you might vote one way. Some bills, you might vote the other.
Yeah, that's not happening.
At the moment,
it's
not happening very often.
Yeah. However, we may have to go to some sort of a coalition government at some point. If anybody stops this nonsense of... It's only two parties, and then change one of the parties, please. Everybody who likes the two-party system, can you just get into one party, and then we'll have another party that believes in freedom? How about that one? Because right now we've got two-party system, and they pretty much believe the same thing. One's just like, this one will kill you in 10 minutes, and this one will take about 5 years. Okay, well, I guess I want to take the 5-year one. I would just like to see everybody who's for, the death of the Republic. You guys go all in the Democrats. Go ahead. Go in the Democrats. Let's have something that's like, hey, we want to live.
We think there's some fundamental principles here that maybe we should go back to.
I think we should just go back to this idea where the new elections thing is interesting. And we just instead schedule them for like every 60 minutes. So just every 60 minutes, a thing goes off on your phone, you vote for a new president. And we'll just keep constantly rotating these people in and out. Because it seems like that's about
as
effective.
We'll try a socialist for a while, and then he'll have to step down.
Imagine the damage Bernie Sanders could do in 60 seconds.
Oh, jeez.
Bernie could blow this whole thing up in 60 seconds.
Mm. You see the show we did last night on Bernie?
I did not.
Well, thanks a lot,
I did
Pat.
Not.
Thanks.
That's really awkward.
Was there Was there something I
he just wanted to know if you just
should've known about it? Or?
No, yeah, you should have known about it. I should have told you. It was part two of the Bernie Sanders expose on who's on his team.
Yeah. Oh, that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, Pat.
I wish I would have seen that.
Yeah. What? Well, that's on demand. You watch it at Blaze TV.
Wow.
You a subscriber? Yeah.
That's a good point.
You a subscriber?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. So I'll check it out.
You're not paying for your subscription, are you?
No, I'm not.
Oh, my gosh.
Of course I'm not paying for my subscription.
There's no support here whatsoever from you.
Anyway. Are you paying for your subscription, Glenn?
Oh, I paid them. I probably paid more than anyone else for their damn subscription.
Probably.
So anyway, but last night we covered who the radicals are. You would not believe who these people are. By the way, I think we know now who the leader or one of the founding members of Occupy Wall Street is. Because, you know, she's just as he has on his campaign roster. All these people who have zero experience, but some of them have experience in, you know, coalitions and bringing people together to riot in the streets. But then there's this one woman who is, she's just a Fordham University sociology professor. That's all she is.
Mm-hmm.
And she can't speak for Occupy Wall Street. She's done a couple of interviews, and it's completely leaderless. But she explained exactly how all of it worked and the hand signals and everything else. It was almost like it was something like of her design. And then she, around 2010, went over for a big conference on the American Awakening at the University of Tehran. And she spoke as a spokesperson for Occupy Wall Street and talked about how bad America is and how important the Occupy Wall Street thing was. I mean, that's who's consulting with Bernie Sanders. They are the most radical of the radicals.
You have a problem with that?
Yes, I do, but now watch me wink like Camilla. Oh, I'm so nasty.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Steven Crowder, who is on the Blaze TV, and I have been a fan of Steven's for I don't know how long. Didn't we give him one of his first real big breaks, Stu? I think it was on GBTV at the time, wasn't it?
He was at, I don't remember, I don't know. I mean, I know he was doing
a lot
of stuff.
It's like the Minolta Theater in New York City.
In New York City, yeah. That's right. He did like he was there for that first event we did.
And remember what happened right before?
Of course I do. Obviously,
don't
it was
remember.
A big moment.
It was a big moment. You may not have. I think you knew. The FBI tried to shut that show down because we had death threats, and they believed somebody in the audience had a gun and was going to kill me.
And then they caught me.
and that
was a sad ending.
And so they came, and I said, I'm not shutting the show down. And they're like, Mr. Beck, we don't know who this is. Very well could. And I said, but they very well may not be in the audience too, right? And they said, no. And I said, you're going to be able to tell who's in my audience and who is not, who's there for, you know, ill purposes.
Yeah, you look for the man bun first.
Right.
That way you know.
See the man bun, you know, take him down.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'll never forget, Steven, we were having to delay the show. Because they were, I was getting a bulletproof vest on and being briefed by the FBI right before we went on. And so, we called Steven in and said, hey, Steven, you may have to stall for a few minutes. Can you go out now? And he looked at me in the bulletproof vest and went, what's going on? And I said, nothing, most likely. And he's like, what do you mean most likely? And I said, don't worry. They're not here to kill you. I said, go out and kill them. Go out and slay him. And he did. And I think that was the first time, at least, I think, that we had him do something for us at the very beginning. And now he's on Blaze TV, and he's taken the internet by storm. And it's because he's politically incorrect, but he's not a hater. If there's anything about Stephen, if you know him, he doesn't hate anybody. Or if he does, he hates them for good reasons, not for race reasons or anything else. You know, people sometimes can make you hate them. But he has been in this argument now with this Vox reporter who identifies himself as, was it Gay Wonk?
Yep.
Okay. The Gay Wonk. And so he has been doing, you know, these anti-Steven Crowder things, and Steven has responded with anti-Gay Wonk things, and he has been mercilessly going after him in a comedic form to debunk what he's saying. Well, the Gay Wonk, who is actually not just with Vox, it's NBC Universal, wrote to YouTube and said, you have to ban him. Look at this hate. Now, I've done that. I've had, you know, Steven has done that. We've had several coworkers reach out to YouTube and say, hey, you know, we're getting death threats here. They don't care. We've never received a personal email. He receives a personal email from YouTube saying, thank you so much for alerting. We're going to investigate, and this has no place here, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So the advice has been to apologize. And in Steven Crowder's, well, it's the reason why we like Steven Crowder. He did apologize. Here's a bit of it.
I, along with everyone here at Ladder with Crowder, am not above recognizing my mistakes and attempting to rectify them. So I'd like to take this opportunity to formally apologize to all parties involved. Firstly, my heartfelt apologies to practicing socialists offended by the Che Guevara Socialism is for Figs t-shirt. I know that we should fight bad ideas with good ideas and respectfully debate the merits, virtues, and shortcomings of socialism, as opposed to merely mocking it with a hysterical t-shirt available at LadderWithCrowderShop.com. And my dear friend and esteemed colleague Ben Shapiro, I sincerely apologize for implying that you're a greedy shekel hoarder. Words matter. And while I swear I meant greedy in a good way, I see now how it might have been misconstrued. I'd like to formally apologize to Vice President Joe Biden for stating that he is, quote, the kind of guy who would have his bachelor party hosted at a Chuck E. Cheese. To my half-Asian lawyer, Bill Richmond, I would like to apologize for the insinuation that his billable hours exceed those actually worked, as well as accusing him of covering hopper and dry rub in preparation for a Mongolian fusion barbecue. Half-Asian Bill, I'm sorry.
He went on and on, and there's much that we can't actually air, but you can see Louder with Crowder on Blaze TV at blazetv.com/Glenn and use the promo code Glenn and save 10%. By the way, if you missed last night's show, in fact, we're going to have to do a recap of it. If you missed last night's show on Joe Biden, you've got to go back and see it and share it with your friends. This is really, really amazing. When I said on Fox that we're going to face a time where the socialists, the anarchists, the communists, and the Islamists will work together to destroy Israel, destabilize Europe and the Western world. I said at the time, they're not going to be working together like calling each other up and, you know, working in the same office, just a different cubicle, but they are going to see that their purposes match, and they will coordinate without talking to each other. They'll just follow each other's lead. Well, I had to apologize myself last night because I was wrong. They are working together, and they're all working together in the same office. In fact, they're all working for one campaign. And I showed you the people that are running Bernie Sanders' campaign, and strangely, none of them are Swedish. None of them really like Swedish socialism, which isn't socialism. That's a capitalist system that has a big social network.
I think you're mistaken, because Bernie Sanders' campaign released a video yesterday that described what they want is not collectivization of government holding of the means of production.
You know what? We're going to take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll just kind of share with you some of the people on the Bernie Sanders campaign the campaign manager, the person that does the grassroots outreach, the people who are, you know, writing the speeches and the messaging. And it's strange that that would be the messaging coming from these people, because we showed you last night on television, that's nothing, nothing like what they believe.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and I want to tell you about something that you should either end your day with or start your morning with, and that is The News and Why It Matters. If you like this show, you're going to love The News and Why It Matters. It's a bunch of us that all get together at the end of the day and just talk about the stories that matter to you and your life. The News and Why It Matters. Look for it now wherever you download your favorite podcast. Here's a disturbing story about a couple in Idaho, a family that had to take their HOA to court over being discriminated against because of their faith. And the jury awarded them compensation and everything else. And the judge came back and overturned everything. And I don't know the last time that a judge came in and overturned the jury on a verdict. We have Jeremy Dice on with us. He is the Deputy General Counsel for First Liberty, and he is fighting this case for this family. First of all, Jeremy, tell me about what happened to the family.
Yeah, well, Jeremy and Christy Morris had this celebration every year. They're one of these people that really like to decorate and celebrate Christmas, right? Think Clark Griswold, and you're pretty close to Jeremy Morris, right? So he decorated his house. And when I say decorated his house, I mean like every inch of the exterior has a light on it somewhere, or at least every foot or so. And this became sort of a thing. And when people would stop by, they would invite them onto the driveway. They would share the gospel with them. They would give them a cup of hot chocolate. And they would invite them to make a donation for children that were either homeless or were ill. And they actually ended up raising a lot of money for this. Well, they moved houses, and then when they did, they alerted their HOA that they had read their covenants and said, it looks like we can just keep on doing this. Want you to know we're going to go ahead and do that. But the HOA didn't like that. And instead of just saying, no, you're not allowed to have any lights on the walls, they wrote back, and I'm going to quote from it. It says, this is from the president of the HOA. She says, I'm somewhat hesitant in bringing this up, the fact that some of our residents are non-Christians or of another faith, and I don't want to even think of the problems that could bring up. And so they went on for years of litigation over this issue, and you're exactly right. The jury found in his favor, in Jeremy and Christie's favor, and said this was clear religious discrimination under the Fair Housing Act. But then a few months later, the judge was convinced to overturn and throw out that entire jury decision. And so we're appealing the case to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals because no one should be punished for trying to spread a little Christmas cheer and raise money for abused or neglected children at Christmas time.
So, Jeremy, how often does a judge do this?
Well, it's fairly rare. It's fairly rare. And the reason for that is that when the judge gives the facts over to the jury, number one, don't forget, our judicial system, our system of justice is based upon trial by jury. And so we respect the decisions of juries because that's what our system depends upon. But when the judge gives that over to the trier of fact, this case being the jury, unless there's like clearly erroneous or some significant problem that has arisen here that they just simply could not arrive to a reasonable decision on things, the judge should leave that trier of facts decision completely alone and not remove it. Now, what we know is that in a motion before this hearing or before the trial went to take place, the judge looked at the arguments of both sides and says, look, this can clearly go to a jury. He says that just that letter itself from the HOA is enough for a reasonable jury to make a decision in favor of Mr. and Mrs. Morris. But then several months later, when he removed it from the jury, he said something completely different from that position. And that just is simply inconsistent for one thing, but I think it's very dangerous to our system of law.
What do you think happened?
I wish I knew. I really do. I don't know exactly, but we're going to bring this case entirely to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and ask them to look at this, because look, the jury recognized that there was a clear religious hostility by this HOA against their family. There was no good reason for a judge to overrule them, and that's a fact that he recognized in the motion leading up to the trial.
So the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is the most overturned in the country. We're not expecting the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to actually do anything right here, are we?
Well, there's always hope. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Number one, don't forget that thankfully President Trump has been doing a lot of good work, and a lot of that work on judges has taken place in the Ninth Circuit. So you never know what panel of judges you're going to receive up there at the Ninth Circuit. But at the very least, I think regardless of what you may think about the Ninth Circuit, and much of that could be true, but at the very least, I think there's still a respect for the jury system in our country here, even in the Ninth Circuit, because it's so important. And when the judge himself recognizes that a reasonable jury could find a reasonable decision to support Mr. and Mrs. Morris,
how do you overturn it?
And then he overturns it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's at least that obvious consistency there that I think even the Ninth Circuit can pay attention to and recognize that there was religious hostility at play here, and the jury should have been left alone to make that decision.
Jeremy, tell me about the Equality Act. Do you know much about this?
Well, I know a little bit about it.
Can you tell me? It seems very concerning on the surface.
Well, I think the biggest problem that I see with the Equality Act right now is that there has been an active effort to ensure that there would be no accommodation for religious belief, behavior, or organizations within it. In other words, everyone would have to comply with it all, regardless of your religious convictions or your scruples that you may have. Whatever that may be, there's no way to exempt yourself from its requirements. And so this is a way to kind of get back at the decision that the Supreme Court made a year or two ago in the Masterpiece Cake Shop decision, where there was really clear hostility by the government. I mean, they compared Jack Phillips to Nazis, for goodness sakes, in that decision. But they're trying now, it seems, to force individuals to abide by an ideology that their religious beliefs simply don't support. And what the left and progressives find so difficult to imagine and conceive of is that people would actually have a moral disagreement. And here's the frightening thing, and that would be okay, right? I mean, our system of government is set up, our system of free speech and religious liberty is set upon a premise to say, we're going to disagree with one another, and that's okay. We're going to provide this space for you and I to have differences of opinion and to express those loudly and, if necessary, strongly with one another, but still call each other neighbors. This Equality Act seems to go completely counter to that idea, and I hope it dies in the Senate like it's projected to do.
Jeremy, are you concerned that you are on the other side of Taylor Swift on this particular argument?
Well, look, all I want to be is a wrecking ball to this this particular act itself. And if I'm against Taylor Swift, I guess, aside from the, 15 to 18 demographic, I'm doing okay.
Jeremy, one last thing. I talked to a federal judge recently, and he's one of the good guys. And I said, so Donald Trump's making some real impact in the lower courts. And he said, yes, he said, but we are really... we're in trouble. He said, I get stuff across my bench all the time where the judge had no rhyme, reason, certainly nothing constitutional, not even law. He said, it's just, this is what feels good. This is what feels right. And he said, that's starting to take a foothold in our judicial system. Do you agree with him?
Well, look, if you remember a couple of years back, there was a big debate about outcomes-based education in this country, kind of teaching to the test and trying to develop certain outcomes, not only just educationally, but socially through that program.
Yes.
Well, I think we're seeing the same basic thing arising now within the judicial system. In fact, I heard just recently someone give an interview that is in favor of packing the Supreme Court of the United States. That we're not getting the right outcomes from the Supreme Court. Well, maybe you're getting the right outcomes that you just simply disagree with, but they're the right ones under the Constitution. And so, you know, we used to be a nation of laws, not of men, as it was famously said years ago. When has that changed? I don't know. But what I'm thankful for is, despite the many vacancies that we have had and currently have in the judicial system throughout the country, Senator McConnell and others and the president has to be commended that they are working through to get the right people there. There's a lot to be countering to here, given the last administration's appointment and confirmations there. But I think there's a process that is developing itself that is going in the correct direction.
So I'm looking at all of these things and seeing how the courts are. There's some good movement and some bad movement. I was talking to Mike Lee and asked him about what we know happened on Obamacare and John Roberts. And I think there's a case for impeachment on John Roberts because John Roberts is making that into a political body. It's not a body that horse trades, is it?
Well, there is at least there's all the talk about we don't know what happens behind those closed doors. And I suppose at some level, speaking colloquially, we may think that there is discussions and trying to convince each other. And look, we know that from the history of the Supreme Court, that people are writing dissents to try to move things in a direction that later on become part of the majority opinion.
Yeah, but that's different than horse trading, isn't it?
Well, perhaps. And I'll let others speculate about what should happen to the chief and to the rest of the Supreme Court up there. What I know is that we've got enough cases either before the Supreme Court or below it to make good impacts on the law. I mean, right now we're waiting for a case to come down from the Supreme Court to protect a 100-year-old veterans memorial. Number one, that shouldn't even be at the court. That should be a no-brainer that just because a memorial happens to share the same shape as the gravestones of Europe for the men who died in World War I, a cross-shaped veterans memorial, that's perfectly acceptable to be on public property. And yet we've got to go through the entire judicial system to get a final declaration to say it's okay for Gold Star mothers to erect a veterans memorial and honor their sons in the shape of a cross. Those cases I'm more concerned about, that we have activist lawyers that are trying to reshape how we look at the Constitution and especially the Establishment Clause, to the point where we're getting absolutely silly over these things, where you can't pass out a candy cane in fifth grade at Christmas time because someone might think that piece of peppermint and sugar in the shape of a shepherd's crook would violate the Establishment Clause. If we're that scared of our own shadow, do we really have the religious liberty and the freedom of religion that the Founding Fathers wanted us to have in this country?
No.
That's a frightening spot to be at right now.
Jeremy Dice, he is from First Liberty. You can follow First Liberty at firstliberty.org. You can get involved and help them fight. You guys don't charge your clients, do you?
That's right. No, if we get the privilege of representing an individual in this country that have suffered a wrong, we don't think they should have to pay an attorney. So we're glad to be able to defend them for free.
They did great work there. And also you should know that Jeremy Dice is the nation's preeminent expert on Ernest Goes to Camp, which we learned the other day on News and Why It Matters. So if you ever have if there's a lawsuit you want a reference from Ernest Goes to Camp in it, you should definitely go Jeremy's way.
Absolutely. And don't forget, Ernest Day is coming up at Montgomery Bell State Park in Tennessee here just a few short weeks. So there's still time for you to get out there and check it out.
It's really sad. It's really sad. Jeremy,
totally legitimate.
Jeremy Dice, thank you so much. From firstliberty.org.
He really brought that up in an argument and in a real case. Ernest Goes to Camp. And he made his extended analogy about how it proved his point. It was amazing. And then he's like, now there's about five Ernest movies that are really good. And then he goes through, he lists five, and he's like, now there's about 14 others. I mean, this one, those were terrible. But the core three or four are really excellent movies. I mean, he's like a legit
Ernest
fan. Did
he win the case?
I think he did win the game. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
they rarely
great.
Lose at
then
First
he's
Liberty.
Brilliant.
They
I know.
Rarely lose.
I know.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.